I'm Thomas Park Clement, and I am from Bloomington, Indiana. Well, let me see. As many adoptees, I'm not sure exactly what date I was born. So it was somewhere around 1950, 1951, and at the latest, 1952. And as you probably know, the war started in June of 1950, and the ceasefire was around July of 1953. And I have quite a few memories from that period. I have a theory that if your childhood is fairly uneventful, then you will have a hard time remembering back to an earlier age. But because of the war, it was so eventful that I can remember when I was 2 and 3 years old. I lived with my birth mother and father for approximately 4 years, and when I was around 4.5 years old, my father disappeared, and then right around that period, my mother had brought me to a street corner and told me to look down the street and not turn back, and that was the last time I saw her. So I was living on the streets for a while. I have no idea how long, until I was found by a Methodist missionary nurse, and I am half and half, so she was on the lookout for, we call them Hapas, which is half Caucasian, half Asian children, and she brought me to an orphanage, and I was there for perhaps 2 years, and then Congress had passed an acceptance of international adoptees in 1957, and I was adopted into the U.S. in 1958. Okay, they lived in North Carolina at the time. My father was a executive for General Electric, and my mother was a housewife who spent a lot of time with personal projects like UNICEF and other things. I had, in the family, I had one brother that was a year or two younger than I was, a new sister that was just born, and then an older sister who was 9 at the time. Well, in the 1950s, as you probably know, there was a lot of open prejudice, and most people didn't know the word Korea or Korean, so, and there were very few of us here in the 50s. And we lived in North Carolina perhaps 6 months, and then my father got transferred to Pittsfield, Massachusetts, with the General Electric Company, and we lived in Pittsfield for around 20 years. And in Pittsfield, that was a little bit less racially prejudiced than North Carolina, but it was still there because I think there was one other Korean person living in the whole city at the time. Yes, I remember the airport. I was in Idlewild Airport. The New York Times came and took a bunch of pictures. I came with a little girl that was, her name was Mia, and she was adopted by a family by the name of Canada's. So we both walked down the stairs of the airplane and met our new parents for the first time. Oh, I still do have an identity crisis. It's odd that the many Korean adoptees, they don't belong to Korea because they were exported out, and then the adopting countries, they have experienced so much prejudice within the new country that they don't feel completely accepted by it. So they're kind of world citizens that are floating with without a specific country identity. I think so. It's almost like there's a parallel universe. For instance, if I can't comprehend what it's like to know exactly how old you are. I have friends who say, I was born at 12:30 on 1973 in May 5th at General Hospital. And that is an amazing thing to me. I can't even conceive of that. And I also can't conceive of growing up and having your birth mother or birth father around constantly, let alone siblings and aunts. So you grow up with a different orientation to the word family or the word birth or family tree and concepts like that. Isolated and alienated. But an interesting thing happened to me when I came over. I was older. I was around 7 years old, and I could only speak Korean. And I didn't understand the concept of other countries and other societies and languages and customs. So I boarded an airplane, and literally 24 hours later, no one could understand me, and I could not understand anyone else. So I thought that overnight I had just gotten incredibly stupid. And this inferiority complex lasted with me for, I would say, until I was in my second year of college and I started acing courses. Then I realized that maybe I wasn't as stupid as I had thought all my life. I would say acceptance of where people are. It's very odd. Most Korean adoptees don't know how to speak Korean. They don't care to, and because of their outside appearance, people automatically think that they use chopsticks or they're Bruce Lee, no Taekwondo, and you know all the things that are associated with Korean people. And but just by their names, they are not Korean people. They, for instance, I know I have a friend in California, and of them have this is their first time that they've ever gone back in, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. So it tends to be a very emotional experience. And the time that I went back, I think it was in 1998, the group was comprised of professionals from all over. They were lawyers, writers, presidents of companies, and it was a pretty unique group. Some of them were in the entertainment field. And we met with the president to talk to him about Korean adoptee issues or bring them out into the public. In Korea, adoption is something that people don't talk about. They're either ashamed of it or and they try to avoid it. Even when Koreans in Korea adopt children, they oftentimes don't tell anybody that the child is adopted. And in the meeting, the president had said that he was ashamed that over 200,000 Korean children were exported from the country and that they couldn't take care of their own. And it's an odd thing because Korea is not a poor country, but it more has to do with customs and policies that they have within the country. Children of unwed mothers, it's socially unacceptable, so they give the children up for adoption, or the poverty level is such that the parents can't afford to keep the children, so they drop them off at a police station or a street corner or an orphanage. And for me, you know, the whole well, I guess some of it could maybe in between the lines of that the book that I wrote, the Unforgotten War, and what I state in there is that although you're adopted into a family that loves you and instills their value system in you, there's an underlying feeling that you are a guest, that everything is temporary. And I know that if I knew that if I had felt that growing up, that it had to be something that was shared by other adoptees. And as many of them do, they live life and struggle with all these strange nonverbal issues. And then at some age, and it's different for everyone. Some people, you know, wake up when they're 18. Some people don't wake up until they're 50. But somewhere in between those ages, everyone starts waking up and all the questions start arising. Who are my parents? What am I doing here? Why was I given up? What would have life been like if I had stayed in Korea? And these are unanswerable questions. It's virtually impossible to find your birth parents in Korea. There's a language differential. Most of the birth mothers don't want to be found. They've gone on with their lives, and you're a secret. So I guess after a while, and after I... Yeah, I don't think I have anything to add. I would say, you know, there's if you're drowning, that what you need to do is you need to raise your hand and make contact. You need to start yelling. And so I would say to adoptees, no matter where they are, that it's connectivity. They have got to do something to get connected. And whether it's through the net or whether it's traveling out of an isolated area into a more diverse place, then you really need to take those steps. You can't just stand there and get bogged down by all the unanswerable questions. So I guess that's what I would have to say.